ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
For 10 years now, one of the most consistently lauded small restaurants in Australia has been Anchovy in the Melbourne suburb of Richmond. It bills itself as Vietnamese cuisine naturalised in Australia. The Age calls Anchovy a shining example. Delicious, it says, the dishes here are bang the table good. And Broadsheet calls Anchovy a thrilling place to dine. The chef and owner is T. Lee. Born to a Vietnamese family in a Malaysian refugee camp, she grew up in Doonside in Sydney's west. Her childhood was difficult, and she shares that part of her story unflinchingly in her book Viet Q, Recipes Remembered from Vietnam. And the book makes clear the transformative effect that cooking has had on T. Lee's life.
When I stepped in the kitchen first time professionally, it was like the first time I really felt like you were part of something, you know, and you just kind of put your head down and you just did it.
And her culinary curiosity and love of fresh produce has brought her closer to a Vietnamese identity that she'd long held at arm's length.
Like I'm a self-taught Vietnamese cook. Like I spent my apprentice days in an Italian restaurant, cooked a bit of French. Like it's all European, and anchovy here was like just jumped in and tried my luck.
I'm Jonathan Green, and this is Every Bite from ABC Radio National. It's all about food and the places where food, culture, science, and history collide. This week, T. Lee, Vietnamese with variations.
So I'm going to put the fish in.
Okay.
I'm going to put the tray.
Hello, steamy oven.
Yeah, so it's a combi oven. It steams and roasts as well.
There it goes.
I'm meeting T. Lee at Anchovy in the kitchen shared with their banh mi shop next door, Gakong. It's early on a day off, and alongside JY, her partner in business and life, and their scrappy pooch cheddar, a T is whipping up a quick breakfast.
So I'm going to make a rice pepper roll today with a bit of steamed fish and a tamarind dressing. Mm-hmm. A dipping sauce to go with. You eat chilli?
Yeah. Okay. And what's here?
So we've got tamarind pulp with a bit of sugar and fish sauce. And then we bring it up to the boil together. So it creates this like a bit of a sweet, sour, a little bit syrupy.
I taste.
Yeah.
Mmm, wow.
I'm gonna throw it in the sink.
That's intense. Intense but balanced.
Yeah.
One of the first things I notice in T's kitchen is the care with which every container of ingredients, spices, prepared sauces and marinades, the care with which it's all been clearly marked. T. Lee likes a label.
I do, because it's like, whether you stand in the cool room, nothing's labelled, like you don't know what you're looking for, and also it's nice to have straight edges.
What happens when you look in someone's fridge? How do you feel?
That's why I get anxiety when I go to my mum's house. Every year, Christmas, I go to my mum's house to deep clean, and she gets so stressed, and I just label everything, organise it, and it's like, I can't cook. And my sister, who still lives with my mum, she's just like, oh my God, here we go. But yeah, I think there was one day we found star anise in 5 different spots around my mom's house.
That's okay.
Yeah, 5 different sizes. And she's like, oh, that's where it is. Oh, that's where it is. Yeah, it's pretty funny. Yeah. But yeah, my mom likes to put everything in like plastic bags, and then she just throws it into the fridge and it gets lost, and then she can't find it. And then she goes to the shop and she buys another one. What would I ban her from buying? Sun-dried tomatoes in olive oil and feta. And I was like, no more. There's 3 jars of everything.
Have a lifetime supply.
Yeah, yeah, half opened. So that's why I think it's good to have labels and everything facing forward. So you know.
You know what's there.
You know what's there. And you
what's
downsize.
Not there.
Yeah.
What's your general relationship with your mum's cooking? All of that?
I think when I was young, it was more I was a little, like, labour force. Like, I grew up in the western suburbs in Sydney, and we moved there in the late 80s, early 90s, I think 89 or something. And surrounding us were, like, everyone's, like, white Australian, and, you know. And then Mum used to have all these, like, crock pots, fermenting pots in the backyard, and, you know, she would always have fish sauce in the sun, you know. And then people, like, neighbours were, like, you know, looking at it's a bit weird, and you kind of grow up a little bit embarrassed, you know, of I guess your heritage. And so as a kid, you're trying to assimilate to be like everyone else, and, you know, and then you have your mother who's so frugal and does a lot of these old classic Vietnamese techniques, and, you know, you don't want anything to be a part of it, really. And so you kind of shut that side of yourself out. And then, you know, then when I became a professional chef, people were talking about fermentation and air drying, all these things, and I was like, you think this is cool? And then, you know, you start to think, oh my god, like, you know, we've been doing it for so long, and it's just, I guess it's just a way of life of preserving food. And then you start to, you know, as I became a professional chef, and I started to realize how important it was to kind of reconnect with my roots in that way, you know. And I think for me, it's like I grew up in Australia, so my Vietnamese food isn't Viet, and it's also not completely far away from Vietnamese food. And me fighting back is more like trying to own my own identity of being a Vietnamese Australian, because and we see it a lot in this restaurant where the last few years we spent a lot of time up north in Vietnam, and we've brought ingredients back from the mountains. And I guess if you're a southern Vietnamese, you may not even ever have seen these ingredients. And we always get questioned, is this actually Vietnamese? And, you know, we always have to go back and kind of explain and justify why this is Vietnamese. And I guess it's a good thing that we're broadening not only the Westerners that come through here, but also the Vietnamese here as well.
Because things often sort of land in a place like this as a bit of a caricature. You know, This is what Indian food is, this is what Chinese food is, and yet those things are incredibly broad and diverse and regional.
And I think also with our sandwich shop next door with Gak Gom, you know, a lot of people are like, why are you changing the wheel? You know, we haven't seen these flavours in Vietnam. But I think my point is, I think in Vietnam there's like over 50 types of sandwiches over there. You know, banh mi just means bread. They put everything and anything in there. Like, just because, you know, you were in the touristy town and you didn't see it, doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Thi Le's confidence as a chef, especially when it comes to redefining a Vietnamese cuisine that's been distinctly influenced by Australian ingredients, that thing which has won her all the acclaim, well, it hasn't come easy. In recent interviews and in the pages of her book, she opens up about being a survivor of childhood abuse and about how that trauma can't be separated from her current reality as a successful chef.
It wasn't a thing that I spoke about freely, and I think probably a lot of people who grew up with me probably didn't even realise what I was going through. And I think meeting JY was...
Your partner?
Yeah, my partner. Eventually I became comfortable enough to tell her what had happened in my family, because it's very... It's very taboo, I guess, in the Asian culture. You don't really talk about family matters on the outside. You know, it's always about saving face, saving the family name, and, you know, you just don't talk about it. And you don't interfere with other people's family business either. And when we were approached to write the cookbook, I think a lot of people associate, you know, chefs with... ethnic chefs who are having a great upbringing and, you know, cooking from their parents.
I learned at my mother's wok.
Yeah. And I remember the publishing house was like, just write about your childhood, growing up, how it's around. And that kind of triggered so many things
in myself. And I think the pressures of the restaurant and writing the book kind of spiraled a bit out of control, I think, with my emotions. And it was, had to kind of go back and face reality, really, because it's just been so suppressed.
And you've bravely put it on the page.
Mm.
And I wondered, reading about your early life and the trauma of that, and in the book it's juxtaposed with food.
Yeah.
I had the thought as whether for you finding the kitchen, finding life as a chef, finding that sort of community and that sort of sense of organisation was a really important part of helping move through that trauma.
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's like when I stepped in the kitchen first time professionally, it was like the first time I really felt like you were part of something, you know, and you just kind of put your head down and you just did it. And I guess that really helped me push through everything, my trauma and that, yeah.
What was your path to that first commercial kitchen?
I was actually studying interior design. I actually wanted to design restaurant and bars, and that's how I kind of got into hospitality. But then I started working at 15 in an Aussie Chinese restaurant, you know, washing dishes and doing odd jobs here and there in the kitchen. And I guess when I was doing design, I took a year gap, decided to go traveling. And I think from there, I spent, I think, about 3 months in China. And I just fell in love with the markets, with the food. And I guess at that time, this was like the early 2000s, where, you know, Chinese food for me was like, you know, sweet and sour pork. It was very like the Aussie Chinese that we grew up with. And stepping into China, it was like people were making noodles on the streets and wok frying. And I was in awe. And I ended up in Leeds house sitting with my partner's at that time's aunt's house, and to say thank you, end up cooking her dinner. And then she was like, oh my God, this is really delicious. Have you ever thought about becoming a chef? And I was like, no, not really. And I think, you know, becoming a chef at that time, especially in the Vietnamese community, it was no one does it because it was a hard job. You know, everyone want their kids to become, you know, accountants, doctors, you know, all that.
And white collar.
Yeah. And so I was like, no. And she's like, maybe you should think about it. And it turns out she had this cafe restaurant in the Hunter Valley. And she's like, if you ever decide to try, you should come see me. And I ended up there for about 3 months and cooking Thai Australian, I think, at that time. And thinking I could do it. And
I was going to say, when did you figure that you might be okay at this, that this could work out?
I was like, my partner at the time was like, you can do this, you know, just cook. And this, I was like, yeah, being a little bit cocky and confident. I was like, yeah, I can do this. I remember the first Saturday. It was the worst Saturday of my life. I still remember it. It was so bad. I think I cried from the, probably the moment service had finished to about 4 o'clock in the morning, and she had driven up from Sydney to comfort me. And then I was like, no, I'm not going to do this. So, you know, how naive and stupid am I to think I can actually do this? And then she was just like, don't give up, you know, give it a try. And luckily, Coralie, the house I was staying at, she had this massive library of cookbooks. And I think I just sat there for the next 3 months, just reading every single, learning to make mayonnaise for the first time, all that. And it was what's that, what do I call it? Blessing by fire or something? Yeah.
Baptism of fire. By fire, yeah.
And 3 months later, I was there, and then I realized, wow, I actually enjoy this. So I said to them, I can't be here. I actually need to go back to Sydney and do this properly. So I went back to Sydney and I enrolled in commercial cookery, and that's how it all started.
And it's interesting that you what you say about the markets in China, because your approach is very guided by that the wonder of produce, that here is the stuff that we can make things with. It's,
yeah,
that's kind of what leads you, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think I I remember every Sunday growing up, we would always, because we lived in Doonside, so my mum would always go out to Cabramatta. So Cabramatta is like southwest of Sydney. It's this like Vietnamese pocket. Like it's like little Vietnam. It's in, yeah. And so we would always go down there on a Sunday after church. And I just remember just going through all the alleyways with mum, and it'd be like people yelling and screaming, produce everywhere. And yeah, and I think when I came to Melbourne, I ended up working for Andrew McConnell, where it was probably the first time where I've got to meet producers. And I remember someone dropping off potatoes for the first time when I was there. And I was like, wow, I've never seen a farmer drop off potatoes. And when I first started with Andrew at Cumulus, it was like the early years when they used to do this Monday masterclass thing where on a Monday, on your day off, you know, you can come in. They'll do us like a 2 to 3 hour session with like either small producers or people in the food industry, and really kind of connect the chefs to the land. And yeah, that's what I kind of fell in love with.
And you've been lucky with mentors too. I mean, Andrew McConnell, wonderful. In Sydney, Christine Manfield is someone that you've worked with.
Yeah.
I mean, how important is that for a young chef to have those people to take you a bit under their wing?
I think it's really important, and I think it's really important to find a restaurant that you actually like the food, you actually want to cook food, people that you want to learn from, and then it doesn't...
So Cumulus Inc. In Sydney, what's an example of that?
So I worked at Universal under Christine. So before that, I actually worked for a chef called Anthony Rodondi. He was Italian. The restaurant was underneath the Harbour Bridge, amazing views. And I think when I worked for Anthony, he was cooking really simple, produce-driven Italian food, 4 ingredients, you know. And at that time, I probably didn't really appreciate it. I didn't realise I appreciated it. But it was just the flavour of everything was like so focused. And then I think with Christine was... really, it was starting to hone the palate. She really taught me how to put flavors together, textures, and really have that vocabulary to taste food. I think at Christine's, like, emphasis on taste was huge. Yeah, and with Andrew, it went back to being simplicity, produce-driven again. So, yeah, all that kind of cements what I do.
Some great layering there.
Yeah.
T. Lee, chef and owner of the restaurants Anchovy and Gargom, and the author of Viet Q, Recipes Remembered from Vietnam. From ABC Radio National, this is Every Bite. I'm Jonathan Green. And although T. has been working as a professional chef for decades now, and Anchovy has been open since 2015, it wasn't until the COVID pandemic that she truly embraced her Vietnamese culinary heritage.
During lockdown, obviously the restaurant was closed, and I spent a lot of time on the phone having a chat to my mum about her life, her journey, about coming here. And
as a refugee, of course.
Life. It was probably the first time in, I think, ever that she actually spoke about her life on the refugee camp in Malaysia. And what she was doing and what my elder sister was doing to get by. And my sister, who was 12 at the time, was brewing moonshine. So she was making pineapple moonshine, selling it in the camps.
What a go-getter.
Yeah. And I was like, what? And then it turns out that my grandmother used to make rice wine for the church in Vietnam. And so my elder sister would always help my grandmother to make rice wine. And to get by in Pilabudong, my sister made like moonshine out of pineapples to make money. And then because of that, I was like, if they could do it on the island, I think I could do it. And so I started learning how to make rice wine, talking to my sister about how to do it. And then over the years, we've made rice wine for fun at the restaurant. I think last year in Tassie, because the temperature was perfect, we spent 3 months at the Fat Pig Farm. So I made like 2 big crock pots of rice wine, and I was just kind of handing it out. And
Yeah, it's really fun. I guess for me, it's like, because of all these family stories and people you run into, people you're talking to, people you meet at the markets, it's because of all these triggering points. For me as a chef, I start to come, oh, okay, but maybe that's quite interesting thing to learn how to do, how to make, how to preserve, yeah. And so that's how it all starts.
Yeah, is that the thing that really interests you, those sort of process things? That
yeah.
This is a different way of treating these elements to come up with this.
Yeah, and, you know, I really struggle coming up with a menu just looking at a supply sheet with a list of ingredients. I just, you know, like...
You're more market-based.
Yeah, yeah. I need to go out and touch things and feel things and eat things to come up with something, because I think reading a list of ingredients on a piece of paper and try to get things together.
You don't know how that looks.
Yeah, or to touch it tastes, that. Yeah. Yeah.
Is food sort of a path back to your family?
Yes, 100%. Like, I think not just my family, I think a lot of families. I think food in Vietnam is such a huge part of our culture. You know, like, we haven't finished eating dinner, we're talking about breakfast, you're talking about lunch, and it's just like an ongoing thing. So, like, even when, like, you know, like in Australia, when you drink, you just, you know, sit in the pub and you knock back some beers. Like, in Vietnam, food is such a huge part of that drinking culture. So you're eating and drinking, and sometimes these drinking parties or sessions, it's like 10 hours worth of food. You're just eating.
Tell me about spinning the head of a chicken.
Spinning the head of a chicken. That was like Christmas. One year, I decided to do Christmas for the family, and the Viets, they love their drinking games. And then I don't know how we had a head of a chicken. My older sister had put a chicken's head in a bowl with a plate. And so I think...
It was cooked, we should point out.
It was cooked. Oh, God, it was cooked, yeah. And then, you know, she twirled it. And then if the beak land on you, you
have to drink.
You have a drink, yeah.
It's a complicated drinking game.
Yeah.
That's in your book, that anecdote. As is a time that you served quails here with the head intact on the bird.
Oh, yeah, we got skewered online.
But this, well, it's such an interesting example because it sort of speaks to our disassociation with the origins of food. I mean,
yeah,
of course that quail had a head.
Yeah. Because, like, in like Asian culture, especially the Chinese, I think, you know, you eat things whole because you're respecting the whole animal, whatever you're eating, as is. So it's not about being barbaric. It's actually, you don't waste anything. You eat everything. And so I remember the early days, we still have whole fish on the menu. People will send it back. And it's like, can you hide the eyes? You know, can you take the head off? And it's like, one time we had flounder on the menu with like sack roe. The roe was still in there, which is delicious. And then sent back to the kitchen, they're like, we want a normal fish. And I was like, I said to Jen, what do you mean a normal fish? This is like, this is as normal as fish can get. Anyway, but yeah.
You want to start a lot of things sort of from scratch. And the example I'm thinking of here is your own fish sauce.
Yeah.
Is that maybe one of your proudest achievements?
Yeah, I think so. I love seeing how things work from beginning to end. And I think the fish sauce was really, it was a way to kind of understand Vietnamese culture and to see the craft of Vietnam. And I think, you know, Vietnam is moving so fast and there's a lot of commercialized fish sauce that's kind of happening in Vietnam. And a lot of these traditions has kind of been lost. And, you know, you compare it to something like, you know, Japan, that they've managed to preserve their traditions but also move so progressively forward. And I see that and I'm like, wow, I'm in awe. And I would love to see, you know, Vietnamese food is so complex and it has such a long history, and I would like to see it to get elevated. And I think being in Australia, growing up here,
Every time I go overseas, I just realise, oh my God, Australia has such amazing produce. You know, people go, oh, you need to go to France and eat shellfish. But I go over there and I say, oh no, Australia's still better. It's still better. And I just think we just have this amazing resource that's underutilised. And so it was like, how can we champion this product that's in Australia, but also hone the Vietnamese craft? And it kind of just smooshed it together. Really.
Well, that's, yeah, if I think of Port Phillip Bay in Melbourne, I don't immediately think anchovies.
No.
And yet
there is a lot of it. Yeah.
It's true. Though those anchovies in Port Phillip Bay are now reserved for recreational fishers. Commercial net fishing has been banned. But before the ban, T. Lee and a local family fished 800 kilograms of anchovies from the bay to make their own fish sauce. Generously, T offers me a taste.
JY, can you get like 4 little glasses?
The most important ingredient in, I guess, Vietnamese cooking is actually the fish sauce. And in our first couple of years, we've actually met a fisherman named Phil McAdams, who fished for sardines. So then one day I decided to ring Phil. I was like, Phil, you know, I've been ringing around. I've been doing Google search. Apparently there's like anchovies all over Australia, but no one seems to fish for them. And he's like, oh, I can get you some. And I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, yeah, it's in the bay. I was like, what? And so Phil took us out and we got about a ton of fish, and we salted the fish on the boat. We put it in barrels and then we waited. I remember the first year. We tried the fish sauce. I was like, oh, you know, it's quite salty. And my mom came down and she tried it. She's like, nah. And then the second year we tried it, like throughout the year we tried it, and it started getting better. And this is heading to our fourth year now. And the sweetness of the fish is actually coming through now.
What an amazing thing to produce.
Yeah.
Tons of anchovies salted on the boat.
Yeah.
4 years later.
It's a bit crazy, but yeah.
Food and culture, a sense of self and heritage, the leavening influence of place. These are complex ideas, and you can feel the tension and balance of them in the work of a chef like T. Lee. And the upshot, lived out through many people like her, might be something that is truly of this place in its modern moment. It'll be hard to define, but it may well be delicious. Every Bite is your weekly journey to the places where food, culture, science and history collide. Every bite tells a story. And thanks to our guest, T. Lee. Her Melbourne restaurant is called Anchovy. She also runs the Banh Mi shop next door. And her book is Viet Q, Recipes Remembered from Vietnam. It's out now. And you can hear Every Bite on ABC Radio National and any time at all on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts. Share us round like a tasting glass of fish sauce. Oh, really, it'll be delicious. We always love to hear from you. You can email us at everybite, or one word, at abc.net.au, everybite at abc.net.au. Every Bite is made on Wurundjeri country and produced by Kim Jurek. I'm Jonathan Green.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.